The Australians had a problem with the gluing that caused fatal accidents. Do you know what the story was there?
Yeah, well, originally I understand they were built from casein glue, which you know, might be good for gluing together your dining room table, but not so good for an aeroplane that sits outside in the weather. And it's mostly about the waterproofness of the glue. They then developed the first sort of synthetic glues and used a urea formaldehyde glue in them as well, which is also quite good, but you know, strong enough for the job, but suffered badly from you know, loss of strength and with humidity. And part of the problem they had using them in Asia was that, you know, the humidity and the moisture you know, caused a lot of delamination issues with parts of the woodwork. And the canopy has an escape hatch on top that, you know, quite an elaborate arrangement to allow you to get out through the roof if you can't get out the door. Originally, the aeroplane, the first aeroplanes were designed that didn't have any armament, so there were no guns in the belly, and you actually climbed up through a hatch in the bottom. The B-35 over here, you'll notice that there's a difference in the location of the hatch. The hatch on the B-35 is up through the floor. So if you bellied landed the aeroplane in, you couldn't get out through the hatch in the floor. You had to go out through the roof. But unfortunately, the position of that hatch on the roof and the chance for water to leak in is right on top of the wing spar. So in the rain, the water would, you know, leak down like it always does and land on top of the wing around the wing spar area. And I guess that caused some issues, particularly in Burma and places like that where it rained every day heavily. And then never really dried out, so they did definitely have some issues with it in those days. Now, of course, we're building the wing with resource and all glue. Fuselage is built with epoxy, all sealed with an epoxy wood preservative. So we think that you know, there's no reason why these airplanes, you know, there's no fatigue life in the wood, so there's no reason why. As long as they're, you know, looked after the way they are at the Military Aviation Museum, and any of these people that have got these aeroplanes, you know, obviously look after them extremely well. They're not parked out and outside like they were, you know, in service. So there's no reason why they can't go on forever, really.
With the Australian aircraft, I think there was some issue with a deviation from the standard with the wingtip design or something. There was an issue that wasn't glue related. It was structure related. I think that had been changed, and that I think caused also an issue with some of the Australian breakups.
The pilot, co-pilot, it seems to show the pictures always of two pilots offset in the cockpit. Could you talk a little bit about flying it, what the roles of the two pilots were?
Most of them were that way. They had a trainer version, but it is a single pilot airplane. The other seat sits back about 6 or 8 inches behind the pilot, so as a pilot, you don't even really see that person other than his knees. And his job could be almost anything. A navigator, a bombardier. There's a bomb site in this airplane up front that you open a door and it slides out. Then he can get down on his knees and look at the bomb site. So whatever they happen to be doing was the role for that guy, you know, the photo manager or whatever.
Jerry, can you talk about how the other planes in your museum and how this airplane fits in with the rest of them? Thank you.
Well, we have a lot of all of our airplanes in our museum in Virginia Beach. They're all World War II or World War I. They have guns on them or drop bombs. That was not really a political statement. It's just that's where the technology was coming from. The governments had the money to build these types of airplanes, and civilians couldn't design and build something like this, and in the quantities that you needed to find the many parts today. But the aircraft that is most requested or asked about, we have a lot of foreign visitors. We have a lot of Canadians and such. They all ask about the Mosquito. Americans still, they're into the bombers and the single-engine fighters, the Mustang and the Corsair. But there are more and more people that are learning about this airplane and the British airplanes. We have quite a few British airplanes. We have a Spitfire, Hurricane, of course, and maybe about a half a dozen airplanes from the Second World War. And then we have a lot of German airplanes. Of the German airplanes, matter of fact, in the next 2 weeks, we anticipate our BF-109 Gustav will fly, and they'll be over here in a couple months. But those airplanes are not as popular, of course, because those were the adversarial airplanes. We've got a Japanese airplane that's under restoration, and we have an Italian airplane. Those are even rarer because they lost the war and those airplanes didn't survive. But this airplane, as far as a foreign aircraft in our museum, is the one that is most admired and most looked at. And so if anybody has a chance to come to Virginia Beach sometime, you'll see the rest. Oh, some Virginia fans there. You'll see the rest of the airplanes. The German airplanes are kept in their own hangar. We brought over a World War II Luftwaffe hangar, disassembled it in Germany, and reassembled it here in Virginia. And that's where we keep our German airplanes. We have a lot of Russian airplanes. We probably have more flying Russian airplanes from World War II, from the Great Patriotic War, than you'll find in all of Russia flying. We're building our RAF control tower that came out of Gox Hill, England. That's where the first B-17 bombers came in. This is an original one that we took apart brick by brick, and we're restoring it, putting all the bricks back together in the same order. We have a lot of foreign aircraft. We got a lot of World War I airplanes. We got a World War I air show coming up in October where we fly just the World War I airplanes. Of course, most of those are replica airplanes. Some are original. Thank you.
I'm looking at this beautiful, magnificent airplane, and I'm saying, you know, I think I'd like one. And aside from some financial things, which we'll deal with offline, how practical would it be to build new production de Havilland Mosquitoes? It seems that you've done a lot of the work already in terms of tooling and manufacturing processes. How practical would it be to build more and, let's say, essentially new build airplanes? And what would be the major obstacles to doing that, things that you didn't have to do as a result of this restoration?
Well, the only thing that we can really replicate easily at the moment is the woodwork, because we haven't really had to tool up to make anything else. There's a few things that have been machined, but only a handful, really. Because, you know, this is the first restoration, you know, we did have quite a lot of, you know, some things we had, you know, like multiple landing gear legs to choose from and multiple engine bearers and multiple of everything. There's a few bits and pieces that were harder to find, but generally there's multiples. And in my experience, it's always better, A, from a provenance perspective and hence a value at the end of it point of view, to use original parts if you can. And it is almost always cheaper to find an original part and use it than manufacture it yourself from scratch. So you wouldn't do what you're suggesting at the moment, because there are still projects and there's still stuff coming out. And the more the aeroplane and the fact that we're rebuilding them gets known around the world, more stuff will come to the surface. And every day we get, you know, contacted by people from all around the world who've, you know, granddad's just passed away and they're clearing out the shed and they found this something or other and so-and-so said it was a piece of mosquito, and I end up having a conversation with them about it, and they send me a picture, and it's actually a piece of a car or something. But, you know, sometimes you do get, you know, Jerry, for example, found some original, and there's one in here now, brand new seat, so that it has a leather seat back that's a removable piece that's sort of domed onto the armor plate that is the seat. Brand new, never been fitted to aeroplanes, still in their original World War II cardboard boxes with horsehair padding and all this kind of beautiful stuff to preserve them. And the one that's in there now was an original World War II production seat back, just bought on eBay. So you can find bits and pieces for them. If you were to engineer it and rebuild it completely from scratch, it would cost like an astronomical amount of money. Even though it's already an astronomical amount of money, it's going to be even worse. So you could do it, but there would be no market for it. I don't think it would be way too expensive.
Can you speak to us about mosquitoes 3, 4, and 5, what the status of the restorations are, and who may be picking those projects up?
Well, Glenn Powell, the fellow that built the mold that this airplane was built off, he's building his own T-43, which is Australian dual-controlled trainer version. He's building his own one of those in his shed where he makes the fuselages for the ones we're doing. We have two others underway as well, both coming to the United States. One's a dual-control T-3 and the other one is a fighter bomber 6, the same as this, although a British-built one. The next one is due to come out in 2016 and the following one in 2017. And I can't tell you who they're for, much as I'd like to. But hopefully you'll get to see them. Well, you'll definitely get to see them flying in the United States in the next couple of years. So there's a chance that we could have four, I guess, if you take the Canadian one. You could have four mosquitoes flying here at Oshkosh one day, which would be kind of fantastic.
Okay. I want to thank everybody for being here, particularly Jerry, for bringing this airplane down and letting everybody get a chance to see it, because it'll probably be a long time before you'll see another one. And we also have the coins. Somebody, Danny, where are the people going
to
be handing them?
They'll bring the coins down to you, Sam.
Okay, all right. And we'd like for all the veterans that would like to have a coin to show up, and we appreciate all of you showing up. Please come back.